Welcome to the Human Performance Podcast. Here we talk about everything to do with human performance and how leaders and organizations can get the best out of themselves and their people. I'm your host, Alex Young. My guest on the podcast this week is Wendy Friesen. Wendy is a worldwide leader in creating rapid change for life's difficult problems. Since 1994, her site at wendy.com has influenced the lives of millions worldwide and brought insight, wisdom, and spiritual growth to people in need. As a flat broke single mum of two, with no resources, money, help, or partners, Wendy created a transformational business for devoted followers who seek real change. Her work caught the attention of the media and quickly became an authority on how to make rapid and massive change in people's minds, bodies, and spiritual life. Wendy.com grew to experience millions in sales in a short time, reaching the hearts and minds of people who understood how her sincerity and passion could transform their lives. We discuss creating courage and focus to be more creative, breaking through your limitations, and greatly improving your skills with powerful mental hypnotic practice. And finally, how does hypnosis affect your wealth and success? And can anyone do it? Hey, Wendy, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, I am doing great. I am so excited to meet you. You're a fascinating person.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I think that the feeling is mutual. And I'm also very excited because I think you're the first guest we've had on the podcast who's in Hawaii. And it's somewhere I've actually always wanted to go. And I'm, you know, I'm very pleased to be able to make this work with the time difference and where I am in the UK. I'm hopeful to get out to Hawaii when I'm back in California when the planes and everything open. Maybe drop in and see you in person.
Yeah, you should. It's a beautiful place. And I moved here 10 months ago when things were kind of exploding with the pandemic. And my lease was up in Colorado. And I thought, you know, I've been wanting to move to the Big Island. And so I did it. You have to get rid of a lot of stuff, like most of your stuff. And it's time consuming and expensive. And you ship your car over and all these things. But it's so worth it. It's just so nice here. I can't like go through the day without feeling immense gratitude for this beautiful place.
Well, it's gratitude's a great word to start on, actually, because I'm really, really excited to talk about your background and everything you've done. But rather than me butchering that introduction, it'd be great to hand over to you so you can explain all the amazing things that you've built and created.
Yeah. Well, I started off, it's been 28 years now, and I was broke, a single mom, my two little kids. I had no money. My business, I had a tanning salon and it was closing. And I didn't know what to do. So I found a little ad in the classified section of the newspaper, which nobody knows what that is anymore. But I was reading the classifieds and it said hypnotherapy school. Called them and they said it starts tonight. And I said, oh, well, and it's like $5,000 or something. And I said, I couldn't possibly do that. And she said, well, just come to the first three classes for free. So I did. And I stayed and she let me pay in small installments. And she had many different instructors throughout the months that came and taught us. And I was so fascinated because I've always been so into all the things we can do with our potential and with, you know, changing the way that we live our lives and think and feel and everything. So it worked out. Timing was great. It was back when there really wasn't internet yet. There's AOL was just kind of starting, but I got a one page web page made by my 12-year-old nephew. You had to know how to code to make a web page. So of course you rely on a 12-year-old, and I got a lot of business from that one web page. I got on TV shows and radio shows, and I was flown all over the place, including to Europe to meet with a very interesting client. And just from that one page, and then just kept going from there. So it's been awesome. I am so grateful to get to experience what I have and create miracles for people.
And one of the things that immediately caught my eye with my marketing hat on was obviously the domain name you do have is wendy.com with an I at the end, which is very unique, very short, very catchy. How did you kind of like leverage that at the beginning? Was that something that you had from basically day one?
Yeah, actually, my brother bought it when he saw it was available. He just bought it immediately, which was way, you know, back when you could get some of those domain names. And that has had a lot to do with my success, of course. If I was no good at this, it wouldn't matter what my domain name is. But a lot of people tell me that when they hear my voice, they know they can trust me. And I don't, I mean, I, on the outside of that statement, I don't know what it is exactly that they're feeling, but I know that I'm coming from a very sincere, very heartfelt place, and they get it. They feel like, okay, the relationship is here. There's mutual trust.
And I mean, your background and specifically hypnotherapy and what you provide to you know, a huge number of people to help them improve or overcome any obstacles in their life is tremendously interesting. And I was just wondering, you know, just to sort of start that conversation off, what, when you were sort of studying it, what were the things that really sort of caught your attention about hypnotherapy specifically?
Well, the first thing was my own response to it, because I had never experienced it and I really didn't know much about it. And in the class, the first day after the class was done, we all lie down on the floor and the instructor does a hypnosis session with us. And it was pretty generic, but the experience I had is memorable to this day, 28 years later, that what I felt, what I experienced and saw and where I traveled to was just profound. So those things keep coming and coming. And then from my really pitiful state of being so poor and having no options and no way to try and invest to make money, I did sessions on myself that were to take myself into the future when I was no longer stuck or feeling pitiful, because that was one of the messages that I got from my subconscious mind, that I needed to be pitiful. And going into that future, in 1 year in the future, when it had already happened, changes the way we hold the memories in our brain and how those memories are triggered, rather than triggering failure or fear or being pitiful. I was now triggering this memory from the future every time I thought about the direction I wanted to go. And one of the things in that vision was that I would make 1 million or more in 1 year from now. So in that future, I'm there very successful. Apparently I'd written a book and there was a whole bunch of people loving what I do. And I'd helped all these people. And I had something in there that confirmed that I had, my business had sold over $1 million. And also I had put down that I opened the door to my beautiful new house in that week, 1 year from then. And 1 year later, you know, I made a lot of smart choices and stuff and I did work, but how this came together is so mystical. My business had done $1,012,000, $1,012,000, an almost exact amount. And then in that same week in August, my house closed escrow, a big, beautiful, brand new house. And I did open the door to my beautiful house in that exact week. And it's just so odd how things can happen like that, so specifically. And for anyone, you know, it can happen. We got to get the obstacles out of the way, like my inner belief that I needed to be pitiful. But once we get those out of the way, that future timeline thing changes how we go through our life and how we look at the world.
And it's really interesting because, you know, there's multiple different, I suppose, methodologies or ideologies around, you know, visualization and belief and things like, you know, the sort of law of attraction and things like that. What for you sort of, I suppose, set hypnosis apart and helped you sort of, you know, achieve those goals, really? Do you think it was the visualization? Do you think it was the hypnosis? Do you think it was overcoming the obstacles? Do you think it was a combination of all of those things?
Yeah, it's all of those. The visualizations, those may or may not have an effect on you if you haven't cleared out whatever your blocks are or whatever your deeper beliefs that are unknown to you consciously. If you haven't cleared those out or at least become aware of them, the hypnosis takes it to a different level. So you're not trying to directed or steer the process, and you're not trying to consciously think, what could it be? What's the thing? What's my problem? And so you have to do the things that are taking you out of that conscious state of judgment and of, you know, figuring it out. And you're just keeping your brain so alert when you're trying to come up with the answer. So in NLP, we have something called parts therapy, and your behavior or your issue has a positive intention, even if that makes no sense to you. It does. So I found the part of me that wanted to be poor, even though I didn't really believe or say I wanted to be poor, but I just decided that. So I found the part, it was in my belly and I'm lying there all relaxed. You know, my eyes are closed. I've been doing my breathing, got down there. And I asked that part, what do you want? And the part said, I want you to be pitiful. And that hurt because that was not me at all. That didn't make sense. But I said, thank you. And I asked the part even deeper, what do you want? And the part said, I need you to be more pitiful. And that, again, that did not make sense, but I just said, thank you. And I asked the part, why do you need me to be more pitiful? And the part said, because then somebody will rescue you. Now, I was not the type of person that would even entertain the idea of like, somebody rescue me. But I had an agenda running deeper than my conscious awareness. There was something that said, I will be rescued. I'm just not pitiful enough. So this was a real theme for me to look at, like that I could have that belief. And consciously, I never would have got that. I could have visualized all I wanted, written affirmations, done all this stuff, but that program was still running. So that's how we get it aware. We get become aware of it and find out what it needs. And then it's no longer a hidden agenda.
And I mean, hypnosis, you know, for me, I guess, as a health professional, has always been really, really fascinating. I mean, I did trauma and orthopedic surgery, as we were chatting about before we started recording. And, you know, there's evidence and case studies in the medical literature where people have, you know, been hypnotized and had things like operations done, where it's kind of like, you know, subverting some of their pain response and things like that. What, you know, with you having sort of trained and been through understanding how kind of hypnosis works, what do you put it down to? And do you think it works for everybody?
It can. I mean, some people will think I can't be hypnotized. It wouldn't work for me. And they, most people have those doubts and you say, well, that's okay. You know, almost everybody feels just like you do. So for people listening, don't think that you can't be hypnotized. It's a matter of training your brain to get to that level. And it's not hard training to do. In fact, it's very enjoyable because you'll emerge feeling like kind of euphoric and blissful and having some insight. But basically, once you're in hypnosis, your mind is going to go to some deeper issues. If you are doing something with going into your future and envisioning yourself as having finished a marathon and finished at a much faster pace or a much faster time, your brain's going to build a memory of that. And you're going to continue to find things that validate those new beliefs in your life. I worked a lot with athletes. I've worked with a fascinating one when you think of human potential is in San Francisco. Every week I went and worked with these traders that traded on the floor in the pits, the options market. And so they're in these pits with all these guys. And there's one broker that comes up to do the thing for the offer, the buy, the sell. Everybody's screaming and yelling. It's so stressful. I was down there in the pits like going, no, this is crazy. And they have to look at two different TV monitors. Those monitors are up high on the left and the right, and they have to, these rows of numbers are changing constantly, but they have to find the difference between a specific number on the left one and the one on the right. They are unlike fractions. So in other words, one could be 8 3/4 and the other one is 3 7/16. And they've got to instantly find the difference so they can make the scream and yell and make the offer to buy or sell. Well, it takes time for them to do that. So I worked with a team of them. There were about 10 guys that worked in the same firm. And I went there after the market closed and I did hypnosis with them. And I created a process for their brain to have a machine in there that crunched those numbers instantly. So it came up with, it had like a, well, we call it a field, like, you know, a little space, a square or a circle in their brain that they see. This number goes in that one, this number goes in that one, and the answer comes up instantly. So we tested it in the office. I gave them a whole bunch of unlike fractions and they had to just write it down immediately. And we checked it and they were all correct. And our minds were blown because when I asked them to, I said, I need someone to like correct the forms now to see if the answers are right. And when they did that, it was very hard for them to like, okay, hang on. Oh, and 2 2/16 and one, and that, you know, and they're really struggling. But the fact that they were all correct when they didn't think about it, they didn't have to try, it was really amazing. And then I thought, we can apply these mind machines to almost anything and we can do way more than we think we're capable of.
Absolutely amazing example. And do you think, you know, in terms of people, you know, like yourself in the first sort of example you gave, where you had some limiting beliefs, even if you didn't fully understand what they were. How, you know, if you're working with people or you're doing a hypnosis or NLP program, how do you sort of guide people on that journey to sort of appreciate it and then overcome those obstacles?
Yeah, well, the first thing that we like to do is the parts therapy that I mentioned, which can also be called a six-step reframe in NLP. We do want to find the hidden agenda, the hidden negative belief, something that the client was not aware of on a conscious level at all. And if it's something that's kind of a surprise to them, then we know, okay, that's one. Other ways to do it are to take someone into a situation. Let's say it's an athlete. And if I have an athlete imagining that he or she's there at the tee, looking at the ball, this is a really important shot, and notice what's happening around you. You know, this one just really matters. And just take a breath and notice what you feel right now. Where do you feel it in your body? And they'll say, oh, there's this tightness in my chest. It's getting really tight right now. And they'll feel it for real while we're doing the session. And I say, okay, notice what that tightness means and what it feels like. And what is the first thing you notice about it? And maybe they'll say, oh, it's fear. I'm so afraid that I'm going to screw this up. And so then we're trying to find out where that fear came from, you know, go back to the first time you felt that feeling. And maybe like one of my golfing clients, he went back to being in Little League at like 8 years old. And he's a pro golfer. And he says, my dad is the coach for our team. And he just gets so mad at me and he yells at me whenever I make a mistake. I just feel so scared. So I've got to go back and help that little boy's mind to release that and to help that little boy's brain, the way it has stored that information, that dad, you know, dad was stressed and he wanted everybody to win. And he only knew that way to do it, and then have the boy and the dad be okay together. So now we release the fear. So now as an adult, being the golfer, he's ready to make that shot. The fear that he had from being that little boy was coming up and saying, I'm going to screw this up. My dad's going to be mad at me. I'm going to disappoint everybody. Everyone's watching. So now we create a whole new scenario and fill it up in that space in the brain where the old memory was, in theory, because we're not sure how the brain exactly holds memories. There's also this non-local consciousness as well. But we want to put this new memory in the same kind of storage as the old one, so we can kind of write over it. So then I use a lot of language about him feeling so relaxed, or she's just ready to take that swing. Everything's working beautifully. And then I describe it. And then as we watch it, we watch that ball and it's beautiful. It's going right where you want it to go, landing right there on the green. And, you know, having my voice guide them to do that, it helps anchor it in and it gets rid of that fear. So when we're approaching a difficult situation, are we triggering memories that support fear or lack or not good enough, or I'm going to get in trouble? And all those memories that are being activated are just like exploding in your brain and in your body and your cellular memory. So what do you do to replace it? You've got to have something else. Now, with the golfers, we have some specific phrases that we use for the different types of shots. So that phrase that they use in their mind and the one deep breath, it makes that memory flood into their body, which is, I've got this. I've got the beautiful swing. Everything works. I know exactly where it's going to land, and those kind of things. Now that's opening up all the memories of confidence and the times they have done well and the great shots that they've hit.
It's really interesting. I mean, there's two examples from kind of performance coaching. One is a sport. And I remember when I used to play kind of soccer and particularly going up to take a penalty, one of the teams that I sort of played for, a lot of the coaching was around sort of visualizing that penalty success. And then, as you say, with like NLP methods, even before I kind of knew what that was, anchoring it by sort of, you know, pressing your thumb and your index finger together.
Right.
And there's another really great example actually from Jordan Belfort's book on sales, the Wolf of Wall Street, where he is sort of training up his sales force. And one of the things he says is to get into that emotional, you know, very positive attitude before you pick up a phone to call somebody, you can actually kind of anchor using a scent after you successfully closed a deal. And then you sort of you know, sniff whatever your chosen scent is before you pick up the phone to get you in that spot. Is that the same sort of principle behind sort of anchoring and NLP that you're employing?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a brilliant thing you just brought up. Our olfactory, which means our sense of smell, that has the ability to activate all kinds of memories in our brain. And when you link that new set of memories to a specific smell, then you're going to activate all those sets of memories that were set up to be successful or confident or whatever it is you need. So yeah, that is just a brilliant thing to do. Really? I had something weird they did with a little scent. This is kind of off topic, but a woman came to me and she had cancer like in her nasal cavities, and she'd had all this interior stuff taken out. And so she couldn't smell anymore. And in her hypnosis session, while her eyes were closed and I was talking about her being in a field of flowers, beautiful flowers, and they smelled really good, I had a little vial of perfume of some kind, and she didn't know, but I waved it just around here. And after the session, she said, "That's weird. I smelled something. How'd I do that?" Her brain smelled without the ability of her nose to detect smells. Her brain still had that ability.
Interesting.
Hypnosis.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. I mean, one of the, you know, obviously we've sort of talked about kind of performance things like trading and, you know, sports and sales. I mean, one of the things that I know you do as well is, you know, work with kind of creative people and instill kind of creativity, which, you know, can often be very, very difficult to kind of link to anything. Like what is creativity? How do you get the most out of being creative, whether you're writing, whether you're, you know, creating a YouTube video or whatever it is that you're sort of trying to create. Can you talk about how that might differ or how similar it is to the existing types of hypnosis and NLP that you employ?
Yeah. And I think being creative, generally people think they're not going to be able to come up with something, and they kind of shut down their creative resources before they even start. So let's say you're a speaker and you have to get on stage. And even if it's an audience of 20 or 1,000, people talk to themselves ahead of time about like, oh, what if I freeze? What if I don't remember what I'm supposed to say? I don't know. I can't memorize all these notes. And they create this frenzy of activity in their brain about what's going to happen. So the creativity, we want you to get into that state that's perfectly accessible when you need to perform, give a speech, go into a meeting with your boss, or be motivating your team. And there's many ways to do it. So with my creative processes, one of them is to put on the head of a genius. And this was something from Win Wenger, who is a genius, that he created. But basically, you take someone that you know who's doing that particular skill, or has the qualities that you want, or is a creative person that can come up with solutions on the fly. And you just, in hypnosis, imagine that it's kind of gross, but you're putting the head on, which it's kind of weird. But anyway, you're putting that head on of that genius and allowing your mind to think from their perspective. Feel what it's like to know that ideas just flow forth and they're always at the right time and they're always inspiring. And the ideas you have even surprise you, and you're going to allow this genius state to continue to, you know, flourish or whatever, right? So then take the head off. But now, before you go into your meeting or your presentation or get on the stage or wherever you need that creativity, you're going to step into this thing called the circle of excellence. So we create this beforehand that in hypnosis, and I usually have people standing up to do it. So they are actually with their eyes closed, they're in hypnosis, but standing up. And I say, in front of you on the floor, there is a circle, and it's a nice big circle that has a beautiful color and it has this glow. And it's for, let's say we're working on creativity. In this circle, your creative abilities are going to be energized and things are going to flow, and you're going to be brilliant and you're going to have all the things you need to give a great presentation. And we have them step into that circle and now feel that energy and feel what it's like to be in your most creative state. So then step back out of it. And now let's put in that circle confidence. That you have confidence, it's natural for you, and it feels so good to trust your body and mind, whatever. And then step back in the circle and then say, feel that confidence in your body. And then I will usually put 4 or 5 things in that circle, and most of them are unique to that person. So it's their own, the limitations they had or the fears they had, but the opposite, that, you know, what they're going to do and how good they're going to be. So now before you get on stage or before you go into your meeting or you have to, whatever the thing is you have to do, you just take a deep breath, close your eyes, imagine that circle's right there in front of you. Just step into it, take that breath and feel it just moving through your body. And now you know you can trust your inner mind to be brilliant or whatever. And that's been really helpful because it forces you to not default back to all your old stuff that's, you know, the fears, insecurities, and worries. And it just makes so much sense. If we activate all these fears and worries in our brain, which a lot of people are doing all the time, and if we eliminate that and replace it with something that could possibly help us operate from a more confident or creative or excited or happy space, everything's going to work better.
Yeah, really, really amazing. I mean, in terms of coaching and I suppose that, you know, embedding some of these tools into individuals so that, you know, particularly with people like, you know, sports professionals or golfers, as you mentioned, so that, you know, every time they step up to the tee to take a swing, they can do it themselves. How much, you know, ongoing sort of coaching do people need to do? Or is this something that, you know, if they make it into habit, they can continue kind of practicing yourself, but, you know, by themselves rather than relying on a coach, do you think?
Yeah, it depends. Like some things we could do 2 or 3 sessions and we'll get through whatever the little bits are that we're holding them back. One session isn't usually going to do the job because we just haven't gotten to where the subconscious mind is trusting me or the process yet, and it's not really coming forward with the information we need. Some people, like this one golfer, I met with him at 7 a.m. every morning, 5 days a week before he went out and golf because he was going pro. He was just almost there. So with him, the improvement was really huge because he was doing it every day with me for 45 minutes every day. And so his advancement in his sport was pretty phenomenal. If a person does some self-hypnosis and it's for something like their team at work that they have to inspire them or get solutions or fix a certain problem, and they just do one self-hypnosis session and they're like, okay, I got this. I can do this. I'll have a circle of excellence and do that. Your deeper beliefs and issues are probably going to take over. We have like this much that is your horrible, scary stuff that's all in your past and in your present. And you've been holding it in your future as well. But now we want to get all the way bigger stuff that is massive amounts of the confidence and the creativity and the strength and the belief in yourself. And it takes a bit to get all of that done. So usually I like to do maybe 5, 6, 7 sessions with someone, but some people just want to keep on going because their lives change so much.
Yeah. And in terms of, you know, your own journey through all of this, and it's, you know, it's been absolutely amazing going from, as you say, kind of literally nothing to building this amazing business. How long do you think it took you to sort of master some of these skills that now you're able to kind of employ across a huge variety of different obstacles or to help people in a variety of different ways?
In creating the ability to be worthy of wealth, which was a big issue for me, in order to do that, there were some things I had to experience personally and keep looking at how I hit a roadblock. So I would again get on my timeline and go along the timeline into the future, you know, in my imagination, to find anything that was obstacles. So like that took just, you know, a couple of different sessions that I did. And one of them was on this timeline, all of a sudden there was this big brick wall. It wasn't brick, it was huge stones and massive rocks. And it was just this enormous wall. And here I am just, you know, like going, oh, what's up with that? So I asked the wall, what are you here for? And then across the wall, it wrote your father. I thought, what does that mean? And the wall said, if you make more money than your father, he will be devastated. This was 27 years ago, and I can remember it word for word to this day. I did not know I had that in my mind at all. So in terms of how many sessions does it take to do this work? Well, maybe something like that was a big discovery that had to be cleared out. And it might have taken several sessions to get that to come up as an obstacle. So like working with athletes, you know, even really high level athletes, they've got stuff that they're still carrying around from childhood, from disappointments, from previous failures, even personal failures. One of my basketball players was having a lot of trouble because of a divorce, and that was interfering with his ability to, you know, be magnificent. So there's not a finite number of sessions, but I would say, you know, plan on doing multiple sessions. And I have a lot of recorded programs for all kinds of issues. And that way you're listening to every day a new session that's taking you a little farther on the journey.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my next questions, really, which is from you sort of coaching people and also doing a lot of the remote programs as well. Do you see any kind of, you know, significant differences from doing kind of like personal coaching to doing a sort of more generic sort of online program, which is pre-recorded? And, you know, for anyone who sort of wants to dip their toes into overcoming any of their obstacles, what's sort of the best way, do you think, that people can get into you know, hypnosis or NLP to help them improve?
Yeah, well, it's expensive to have private sessions and insurance doesn't cover it. So it can get into, you know, even thousands of dollars if you're doing a lot of sessions. A great example is my addiction freedom program, and it's for addiction like drugs and alcohol. And I created that many years ago because I had a client who came in to quit drinking, and I thought, I don't know how to help someone quit drinking. What? They got AA for that, right? And as I looked into it farther along and worked with more addicts, I was just having these results with them that were mind-boggling. It just made no sense that this could happen. Like this one man that said, I'm just a fat slob drunk. That's all I am. Everybody knows I'm just a fat slob drunk. I drink over a case of beer a day. And for all of his adult life, and he was in his 40s, and he stopped drinking and he forgot that he had beer in his fridge because he forgot to drink. We had implanted some things into his future of what he was going to be doing now that he was no longer an alcoholic. And he's not an alcoholic. He's not diseased. He's none of those things. And in his future, because he listened to the sessions, we had some sessions together, but he listened to the sessions that were recorded as well. And he started training to be an athlete, but he called me up and he said, this is really ridiculous. In my future vision, I was a really high level athlete. And when you asked me to find something I'm passionate about that I love, that's what I was doing, but that makes no sense. I am not an athlete. I never have been. He became an Ironman triathlete, traveling the world to do Ironman triathlons. In his mid-40s, he started doing that, and he's still doing it. And I keep in touch with him all the time. So in his case, having the multiple sessions, to answer your question about, you know, how much does it take, he was listening to these sessions for the addiction program over a period of 2 weeks. So every day, one in the morning, there's a different one during the day, there's a therapy one, there's something you're going to sleep with, and it's not repetition. Each one is a different aspect of what you need to get completely sturdy about not being an addict anymore.
And with, you know, you've got a huge depth and breadth of different types of things that you apply NLP and hypnosis to. As we sort of touched on, you know, we've looked at kind of addiction, sports. I know you do sort of relationships and things like that as well. What do you think are like some of the commonalities in terms of people's own like limitations and beliefs that are sort of, you know, generically true across all those things? Because I think it's really, really interesting thinking about like what just holds, I guess, humans back from really being the best they can be.
Wow. You know, when you're asking that question, the thing that first popped into my head is the thing I hear people do to themselves all the time. You like, you are your own worst enemy, not you, but people. I hear people reinforce the negative thing that they actually don't want. So we were talking about public speaking and having confidence. And if I say, oh yeah, it's really fun getting to be a really good speaker. I'm really enjoying how I've just, you know, overcome all these stuff and I can jump on any stage anytime. And they're like, oh, I'm so afraid of speaking. I could not do that. I would just have a heart attack. I can't do that. Well, they keep reinforcing that. and deciding that they can't do it when in fact they can. So there are so many things that we have in our life that we reinforce either silently with our self-talk or by saying it to others. And I do some art, and I was talking to a friend of mine, and I say, come over, let's do a painting. It's really fun. She says, I'm not an artist. I have no creativity. I can't do anything. I said, yeah, you are. Everyone is. Everyone has creativity. You just haven't experienced it. No. I'm totally not an artist. Or if they had some bad experiences in school, let's say with sports and things that were embarrassing or held them back. And then you say, hey, well, why don't we go learn to play tennis? And they're like, no, I can't do sports. I'm no good at that. I'm a total klutz. I'm like, how do you know? Only because you've been reinforcing this in your mind for years and years and years. And when we hold that belief, that's what's holding us back. That's the commonality that most people have. So if you have trouble sleeping at night, what do you tell all of your friends and everyone you know? Say, oh, I'm the worst insomniac. I have so much trouble getting to sleep. I'm lucky if I can get a couple hours. I just can't get to sleep. Well, here we are doing hypnosis for people with the things they do want and creating that state in their brain of all the resources they need to have XYZ. Well, if someone's an insomniac, you know, I would never tell them, oh, you have so much trouble sleeping. You can never sleep well at night. You're always, but they're doing this to themselves. They're hypnotizing themselves to fail. So a woman who took the bar exam to become an attorney, she failed twice. And it's a big deal, you know, to have to take that exam and then to fail twice. And she came to me and we did hypnotherapy to get rid of some of her issues, the fears of the previous failure, and the things she would say to herself to hold herself back, you know, to think that she's going to fail again. And she was just worried so much that she's just going to fail again. So that's what she's focusing on. So I built a whole bunch of different machines in her brain. Imaginary machines, of course. I don't do surgery. So I built these machines. Each one was for a different aspect of what she needed to remember for the bar exam. And then some of them, and she had her eyes closed and she's lying there in the chair all relaxed. And she said some of them, like this one that has all the torts, this one just connected with the cases or something, whatever they were. So these things knew what they needed to, where they needed to get the information to come up with these answers. And it was brilliant what we did together. And she passed the bar exam, of course. But she had all these fears and continued to tell herself that I don't think I can do this. God, I'm just going to, you know, fail again. So that's what we do.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly as you say. I mean, obviously you work with high performance athletes and it's one thing in sort of, you know, performance coaching, you know, really jumping on that self-talk and changing people's both internal, external dialogue from, you know, even just negative wording of things like, you know, yeah. I have to do something to, I get to do something. Yes. And, you know, whenever I do sort of coaching with any of our teams sort of internally, I always sort of pick up on language and have a real kind of attention to detail around if people are saying, you know, I'm so busy or something like that. And it's like, well, okay, well, let's dive into that. Why do you think you're busy? What are you doing? How can you sort of, you know, change that up and you know, focus your language on different things. So I find that really, really fascinating. In terms of the applicability of what you do and you know everything we're talking about, why is not every single person on the planet doing this to become healthy, wealthy, and successful?
Well, there's a few million more than there were before I started doing this. I've had a really big reach for people who, you know, they didn't know that they were screwing their own lives up, you know, by all these horrible habits and beliefs. And my work has reached a lot of people all over the world. Why aren't they? But they are, because we're in a time now where the information is available and that there are enough, you know, podcasts and people spreading this, the word that I'm spreading and helping them understand. Some people just aren't going to engage in self-help or changing habits and behaviors and creating new abilities. They're just not there yet in their life. If they were to read a book like the one by Wen Wenger, that it's called The Einstein Factor, and it's so brilliant, the things in there and the processes. And then you open up your life to like, wow, I could actually do these processes and I might actually have this particular skill or this memory thing or this confidence or whatever it is you're wanting. So yeah, people are definitely waking up to it faster than ever. It's really accelerating. I was in Bali just about 6-7 years ago, and I was in the hospital because I hurt my back because I dove in the pool wrong. But I'm in the hospital there and the two nurses come in. This is about how big my reach has been. That's blown my mind. Two nurses come in and they said, "You're Wendy?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "You're Wendy?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Oh, the doctor wants your autograph." It's like, what? I'm in freaking Bali. And they can't even really afford to buy my stuff. So it's fine if they're bootlegging it. I don't care for them. The rest of you have to buy it. But anyway, so then they send me down for an MRI. And when they're taking me on the gurney into there, the guy that's going to do the MRI looks at me and goes, "Oh, Wendy, Wendy, oh my gosh." And he picks up his phone, opens it up, and he's scrolling through all these sessions that are on his phone from me. He says, every day, I listen to you every day. You have changed my life in every possible way. And I listen to all these. I was just wondering, like, how many people are there out there who have connected with me and allowed me to be the one that is their guide that's helped them change these massive things in their life? I am, again, so very grateful, but people are doing it. They are taking it on. And I'm really grateful that I'm one of them that has been able to inspire them.
No, it's absolutely amazing. And obviously you've worked with a huge volume of clients over your career. Are there any kind of like standout success stories, beyond the ones we've sort of touched on already, where you sort of pinch yourself and think, you know, how on earth did I do that even with all my skill?
Yeah. There's so many. There's miracles that I have participated in. I'm not saying that I'm causing the miracle, but I was there. So Martha was in her 60s and she was in a hospital bed in her house. She had been unresponsive for 2 years. So her two adult daughters took care of her in the house and nothing moved in her whole body. She would just lie there every day, but she could blink. That was it. They couldn't find anything wrong with her after 2 years of doctors doing everything possible. So she was just left there to live like that. So I went in there and I would sit down with her every Tuesday and do a session. And the first session was just getting her brain to reconnect with her body. I told her a story about her going down by this little creek, dipping her toes in the cold water, feeling the sand underneath the water, and then sitting on a blanket. And a couple little girls come down from this little path and they sit on the blanket. They're making daisy chains with these little flowers. So her fingers would be imagining doing something, and did that. Next week, I walked into the room and her eyebrows raised, which was a pretty big miracle because it was actually a sign that she knew I was there. The next week, I went in and she smiled. And then her hands, her body was pretty much frozen tight, like you couldn't unbend her fingers or move her arms at all. So I had a session of her playing with Play-Doh, but her fingers became the Play-Doh and the fingers were then soft and movable. And even in the session, I could move them, which was pretty miraculous. And I did that also with the rest of her body to get it to be flexible. And the next week, her daughter, the two of them, were able to sit her up and put her in a wheelchair so that they could take her places. Her body had not been able to move or bend. And this was just within a period of like once a week for a couple of months. And I kept working with her for about 4 or 5 months. And it was amazing that you take something that the whole medical community has given up on, and there was just something that needed to be reconnected. So many months later, they called and the daughters called and said, "Martha's in intensive care and she's got a breathing tube and they're going to take the breathing tube out later today, but they said she'll die because she won't be able to remember how to breathe." So I went to the hospital and I sat next to her and did a session with her. And I said, Martha, you have always known how to breathe and you will breathe when the tube comes out. When you were a baby, when you were born, the first thing your body knew how to do was to take that big breath. And you know how to do it even now. And you know how to keep breathing. And it is the simplest, easiest thing. You don't even have to try. It will just happen, right? So I'm doing this for about 20 minutes. Some guy walks in who's like a nurse or an orderly or something, and he's listening to me. And he says very loudly, she's not going to breathe. She's going to die. He said that to her. And I said, Martha, we know that's not true. He does not know what he's talking about. You're going to breathe. And that, so later that day, I went home later that day, one of the daughters called me and she says, they took the tube out. Martha's breathing. And she's been breathing for hours. And they all told her in front of her, she was listening, kept telling her she's just going to die. Our brains are so amazing. If we say the right things, give them the right information, it's so amazing. That one was one of the most miraculous ones, but I've had a lot of miracles. Like phantom limb pain. I totally figured out why people have phantom limb pain and stopped it from happening. It just, once I did it with a client, the first time I realized, this is why the pain is still happening. But things like that, that are like impossible for people to figure out how to fix it.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely incredible stories. I mean, particularly like phantom limb pain, which is, for all healthcare systems, such a massive, economic cost as well on physiotherapy and mirror therapy and all this type of stuff, which is incredible. And it is very much like a nervous system problem. So I completely get, how what you're talking about in NLP and hypnosis can overcome that, which is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. What I figured out, I had a young lady that lost her leg in a motorcycle accident and we worked on that for her. But the one I figured it out with is a man who had diabetes and his foot was infected and the infection was so bad they had to take his leg off at the knee and then had horrendous phantom pain. So while we were working together in the sessions, I realized that in his brain, his leg is still there, but it's infected. By removing the leg, the infection in his foot never had a chance to heal and send the message back to the brain that it's healed. So my thought was, the brain is still sending this ferocious activity down through the nerves and the memory of the nerves into that foot to heal it, because it has got to get that foot healed. And the brain is still doing that. And that's what's causing the pain. Because, God, I don't know how this works actually, but it's going into there and activating the nerves and creating real pain because the brain never got the message that it's healed. So what I did is I said, okay, your foot is healing. Just notice it getting better. The infection is gone. The skin is healing. It's all looking so healthy and so good. Now that message comes all the way back up through all the nerves, the tissues, all the way back up through your body to your brain. Oh, and just feel that. Your brain knows now that that foot is healed. And his phantom limb pain was gone. He drank a fifth of whiskey every night and took opiates every night so he could pass out because he couldn't sleep. And I got rid of his phantom limb pain. So that has worked with many people who have phantom limb pain. The brain can't get the message back to it that it's healed.
Really, really interesting. Really interesting. Wendy, I think I could spend the entire remainder of the day and night speaking to you about all these different use cases for NLP and hypnosis. But as we sort of start to wrap up, I'd be really interested to learn who your human performance hero is, who's kind of, influenced you on your own journey.
In the very beginning, I think I was 16 years old and I got Wayne Dyer's very first book. And I read that and I loved it. And it totally opened me up to thinking differently. And I was so young and I still have that book. I kept it all these years. And from there is a man named Steve Parkhill, who was a hypnotherapist. And when I was brand new, we didn't have email. We had to put like stamps on a letter, put in a mailbox. Oh my God. So we didn't have email yet when I started, but I called Steve because he wrote a book about cancer and hypnotherapy. And that's a pretty big claim to make. And none of us are supposed to make that claim that we can treat or cure cancer. But he had a lot of successes on people that were just, left pretty much to die. He would spend time on the phone with me Like, he'd talk to me for an hour and a half, just imparting his brilliance and the stuff he knew. And he died recently, but he was just brilliant in what he learned and how he transformed it into something even bigger. So he was one. Wen Wenger used to spend time on the phone with me as well. He's the one that wrote The Einstein Factor. Hugely creative man and kind and generous. And Jerry Kine, also really big in the hypnotherapy world. And he spent time with me. And these are definitely the ones that stand out as my heroes. What was cool when I met Jerry Kine at a convention, even though we had already been friends, but we met each other there. And he's like, "Oh, Wendy, you're my hero." I was like, "No way, you're mine." But man, yeah, those are some of the big ones. I was involved with Tony Robbins' work for a long time, but there's some some rather slimy things that if you're a hypnotherapist or an NLP practitioner and you look at his mastery of mind control stuff, if you go to his live events, he's definitely not my hero anymore. He's brilliant, of course, but there's some things he does that are very manipulative, and it's unfortunate that that has to be the road he chose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just thinking, I think it's got to be on my bucket list to visit a hypnotist convention. And that sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. To share information the way that we can now, which we couldn't do when I started out, there was only one conference, and it was a bunch of weird old men that were all fat and watch swinger guys. Like, why are you guys fat and you're smoking cigarettes? You're supposed to, whatever. Now there's a lot of brilliant young minds, meaning these are not a bunch of 70, 80 old people that are doing the same old stuff they did. And boy, you learn so much because we put all of our minds together and figure stuff out, and we just grow so much.
No, it sounds amazing. And if anyone does want to open their mind and grow themselves, where can they go to sort of find out more about you?
Well, you can go to wendy.com, WENDI.com. And from there, you'll find the links to my podcasts. And there's a bunch of free stuff on there, actual hypnosis sessions you can download for free, and just tons and tons of stuff. If there's a problem you're having that you are not sure how to move forward with, feel free to send me an email, of course, and I will help guide you. And if we need to have a little consultation phone call, we can do that, no charge, and just figure out what it is that's most needed. And then usually I'll have a recorded program that you can get started on. And then we can either do some short phone calls every day as kind of coaching sessions while you use the recorded programs to do the hypnotherapy. And that way it keeps you accountable and you keep in touch with me. And I love working with it that way because it saves people a lot of money and gives them a really big experience.
No, amazing. Well, Wendy, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. And congratulations on everything you've done so far. And hopefully I'll be able to get out to California and Hawaii very soon.
Yeah, it's great. Well, I have an extra bedroom here, so
I might take you up on the offer. That sounds outstanding.